For May the 22nd, 2015, we talk about D4's PC release announcement, Dark Echo, and we ask you which games you kept playing even though they stopped being fun. Welcome to the 105th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, I don't have any like cool network thing or whatever to usher in. I do have a zoo story, though.
A zoo story?
Ooh. Well, okay. So not so much a zoo story, but two fun things. I went to the zoo with my brother and my niece over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The Cincinnati Zoo. I was very impressed, but I saw two things. Mm-hmm. The first of which, descending down into one of the like animals of the canyon exhibits, there was a very small bottle, an empty bottle of Absolute vodka. Or no, it was Svedka. It was like it was like hidden in a planter, like sticking out from the dirt. I took a picture of it. It was really funny. I wondered how long that had been there and why somebody thought it would be cool to go to the zoo trunk.
Okay, wait, it was, you know, it's like, you know, bros icing tigers, right?
Yeah. Oh, man, how many deaths happened in the summer of 2011 because of that? Yeah. Okay, I can see in principle why it would be fun to be at the zoo drunk. However, I wouldn't want to be at the zoo during the summer full of that crowded people under the influence, right?
I feel like if I was in the zoo in the summer, surrounded by thousands upon thousands of people and thousands upon thousands of animals, drunk is exactly what I'd want to be.
I mean, which one of us is the animal? Am I right? Think about it.
Hashtag think about it.
But the other thing, I'd never seen this in the literally five of zoos that I've been at. I've never seen a monkey poop, but a bonobos walked right up to the glass and was like, "Hey guys!" And then he squatted and then just took a big liquidy poop right in front of us and then scampered away. I was like, "You rule, little guy." And my niece was all like,
"He wasn't throwing it."
Yeah, true. Well, it wasn't of a consistency that one could throw, I think. It was pretty cool, but yeah, that was my week. Anybody have any anecdotes that are comparable? I've set the bar. I know.
I cleaned up I don't even know what to describe it as, a green space in a cul-de-sac.
Oh, you posted pictures of this. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very, normally I'm not a yard work kind of guy. Like, I'll mow the grass and that's as far as I go.
Nor are you civically minded.
Yeah, screw all those guys.
I've seen you light matches and throw them at meter maids.
Yeah, but so that was my weekend. Is there was a big like Cincinnati service project thing, and we took this thing that was really overgrown and nasty, and we made it pretty, and that felt good. Mm-hmm. Even though that's not usually my bag, so that's as close as I can get to a zoo story.
So have you now added philanthropist to like your list of titles?
Yeah.
Is that how you're going to introduce yourself on the show now?
Yes.
Oh, how about you, Ben? Got any stories?
Nothing as cool as the zoo story.
It wasn't even a cool story.
I do have one story. I went to a wedding over the weekend, and it was with some board game friends in Vegas. And the way the wedding was is they rented a mansion for the weekend and just invited everybody over to play board games the entire week.
Oh, that is baller.
Oh. Yeah. So it was just like, it was great because most weddings, like, you don't even see the bride and groom. Uh-huh. And in this case, we got to just hang out the entire time. So it's cool.
So it was just like a day, and then did they just have like a small little ceremony and they're like, back to Catan. There's sheep to be traded.
No. Catan is, that's like lightweight board game for these people. They're hardcore. But yeah, no, wedding was Friday and then board games the rest of the day, time Saturday and Sunday. So yeah, that's fun.
That's pretty cool. I like that idea a lot. Mm-hmm. Nice. David, how about you?
I've got nothing. I am a shiftless roustabout now that I'm no longer either a student or employed. So
yeah, so your days just kind of blend into each other. You didn't even know it was the weekend, did you?
you know.
Oh, well. Huh. So I feel like everybody who's listening to this knows us better as people now. Why don't we get to the... go ahead, Ben.
Post what you did with your weekend on Facebook.
Yeah, bonding achieved. Well,
specifically, everyone
by which
that.
We mean do on Facebook page. What people do on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I just opened up Facebook and just yelled at the screen, just saying, "What am I to do with you?" but yes, now that everybody knows us better as people, why don't we get to the body of the show, where we've got the big three, we've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and let us begin with
the brief,
where we talk about video game news. Does anybody have a story they would like to volunteer to go first?
You know we do.
I know, because we have a little chat room kind of thing. Ben, go.
Yeah, so I was just going to talk about they announced the Civilization Beyond Earth expansion that will come out this fall. And I have not played the new Civilization game, so this is more of just information sharing than me being excited about it. But it's called Rising Tide, and I have no idea what it's going to do. So there you go.
Did you read the story?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Read the headline.
So this is the definition of the brief. It's not just news. It's the headlines.
You guys, new podcast concept. It's like tweets for podcasts. It's 140-second episodes. Mm-hmm. You can only do the headlines in that time.
Ooh, man. That sounds like a really good challenge. Just like crank out a month's worth in a week and then just put a new one out every day. But sure. That would have to be pretty topical, wouldn't it? Fuck.
To think of how little we would get done in 140 seconds.
Hmm.
Yeah. We even get our introduction done in 140 seconds.
Like saying our names, like definitely.
I was going to say, we don't even get our names in 140
seconds. 140 seconds is a lot longer than you think, honestly. It really is.
Two
and a third minutes. You and your math.
I prefer to live life.
Maybe we should just like wait 140 seconds to just see what it feels like.
Okay, let's put it on the clock.
Nope, can't do it.
So I will step in where Ben stepped out and say that this introduces oceanic biomes and creatures to the otherwise landlocked or landbound gameplay of this alien world colonization effort, letting you try and assimilate with and cope with aquatic species who are even more alien than the ones you would encounter on Terra Firma. This also adds extra factions, including some that are descended from wealthy Middle Eastern states, overall upgrades the diplomacy system. Ben, I'm going to throw this one right back at you. Have you played the mainline Civ games, or are you like me, a Revolution kind of guy? Are you a revolutionary?
I'm only a Civ-Riv. Yeah. I've only done Civ-Riv and XCOM, so.
Okay.
I'm missing out.
I don't know. I have all of them. I've dipped my toe in. I really like Civ Rev a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. So I actually played this a couple weeks ago. I know this is not the grind, but I feel like I'm officially like done with that game, though, because every time I play it now, it's like the exact same strategy, and I always win on Deity, and it's just not interesting anymore.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's more to your credit than to like the game's detriment. You've just played it enough that you've mastered it.
Yeah. So I think I'm ready
to shift your focus to XCOM Impossible. Oh, sorry. My bad.
Oh, or that. Yeah. Or I could hate my life. I could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'll throw in my story because it should be short. This one's relatively old, but this has been kind of a slow news week. It's one that I'm personally very, very excited about. So the one case for me to buy an Xbox One has been the existence of D4, which is Swery's game, Swery being the guy who made Deadly Premonition, one of my favorite games of all time, and the fact that it was exclusive to the Xbox One. However, a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that this would be coming out for the PC on Steam and such here at the beginning of like June, I guess.
So, what big Xbox One exclusives are left?
Whatever Microsoft makes and whatever they announce at E3, I suppose. Like, they've got Halo and they have Gears of War and the same stuff they've had for about a decade. Sunset Overdrive looks pretty cool. On the indie scene, Below looks pretty great as well. That's kind of the new game that follows up in the, like, Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery kind of art style, but it's a mixture between Zelda and a roguelike kind of thing. But I don't know if that's coming to PC or not. If it is, it's kind of a moot point.
I think it's one of those ones where they go and change the subject really quick.
Yeah, it's a like console exclusive kind of thing. Like, it'll be out on the console first, but then but who knows? Like, maybe they'll pull a No Man's Sky on it.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, the lower tech indie games kind of remind me when they're console exclusives. It sort of reminds me of, like, when I see the Billy Mays style ads on TV, where I just know if it actually ends up being good, eventually I'll see it in Walmart. You know, if it's, you know, basically it's just, yeah, I'll wait. If it's any good, it'll eventually be in Steam.
Yeah. Which it's been foolish to bet against that in the past, so.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be exclusive for like a little bit, then it'll be out on Steam, and then it will go on Humble Bundle, then it will go on PSN, and then it will be dumb for you to have never played it.
Mm-hmm. Although I'd like to point out, I feel like it might say something about at least our perception of Xbox that we just say spoke of playing a game on the Xbox as taking a risk.
I don't know. Like, because, like, so the statements that we just made about, like, oh, console exclusives and it'll all come to everything, like, that cuts both ways insofar as somebody who has an Xbox One is probably playing most of the games that are worth playing, because the console that you have, by and large, just doesn't matter an awful lot.
Yeah, that is true, and that's kind of nice this cycle around. I don't know, I don't like exclusives overall.
Yeah,
I think they're kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, like, I really wish that Bloodborne was not a PS4 exclusive, as like that. You know, like, that is the horse that I backed by buying that system, but I backed that horse because Bloodborne was exclusive to that. Oh fuck, it worked on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've, like, looked up Rent-A-Centers near me because I want to play this crazy bonkers game, and, like, I've not looked at any YouTube footage. I couldn't tell you a lick of what this game is about. You know,
which game are we talking about?
D4, Dark Dreams Don't Die, the one by the Deadly Premonition guy. The story's about. Yeah.
So Cole, do you like the entire I was thinking Persona for some reason. Deadly Premonition is not Persona. No. I was going to ask if you were a fan of the entire Persona series or just one particular game.
That is a weird, I don't blame you for having that kind of thing, because you don't know much about either of them. So that makes sense that you would conflate them. That sounded super condescending, but I do the same thing all the time with a bunch of stuff that I know that that's a thing and that other thing's a thing. So I'm going to mix them up together.
I would love to see a Persona take on survival horror.
I said even stranger is the fact that I caught it right as I was saying it. So anyway, yes, nullifying the question. Do you like the Persona series?
No.
Is I guess where I'm going with that.
I played a little bit of Persona 4 and I liked it, but there's just there's not room in my life for JRPGs.
Yeah.
So, but, like, I've eyed it, and, like, the second it goes on sale on PSN, I'm going to buy Persona 4 Gold because I liked that game when I played it. But womp womp. Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of it, but I don't know. I'm excited about this. Early June's going to be pretty cool, and I'm going to dive into that. People have told me, like, when I tweeted about this, oh gosh, I'm really excited about this game coming out. People are like, oh, temper your expectations, etc. I will brook no contradiction to my irrational exuberance in the face of contrary evidence.
Well, I mean, to be fair, that, you know, it comes with 4 whole Ds. I mean,
yeah,
that's practically a steal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky if I know what to do with, like, 1 or 2 Ds, you know? So, like, 4 of them, come on.
If you just Google around a bit, I think there's a lot of videos out there about it.
Mm. Yeah. Did I just finke myself? Yeah, probably. I did.
See, I am not going to contribute anything to this conversation.
Let's see here. David, how about your story?
Sure. So the team behind the Stalker series, GSC, is, I guess, coming out with another new game. They had kind of gone on hiatus. I'm not actually sure the story behind the them taking a break, but they're now back. And they're producing Cossacks 3. So apparently, I didn't know this. Even though they kind of, at least in the States, became famous for the Stalker series, apparently their big moneymaker was a series of real-time strategy games called Cossacks.
Yep.
That was real popular in Eastern Europe. So it sounds like kind of their big claim to fame, other than just kind of being, you know, real popular RTS in that part of the world, is you could control just, like, you know, actually, like, whole armies, so, like, you know, thousands of units.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like this time around they're trying to really double down on that implementing like AI for each individual unit, and you know, you can they each kind of do their own thing, or you can order them about and stuff. So that seems pretty cool.
It's the kind of stuff that makes like the Total War series that Sega does look like StarCraft,
right? Exactly.
You know, just in terms of being like real Eastern European, and you know, like, and when I say that, I'm not being ping pong. I'm actually like alluding to a kind of like design ethic, a real Eastern European approach to this incredibly Grognard-esque war game kind of thing. Like, sure. I've always been like interested in them from afar, but always knew that I would not be up to the complexity behind them.
Yeah, I know I have trouble like controlling more than 10 units in StarCraft, so several thousand would just be right out.
Yeah, and you'd literally just have to drag a box to control those in StarCraft. Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think my favorite part of this article, which I guess I should say is the an interview by Polygon, is they're discussing the previous games and, you know, the distribution and pirating and stuff like that. And there's a quote where the fellow says, at the time, the quality of discs printed in Russia was rather low. At high speeds, they just exploded in the drive.
Nice.
So yeah. there's like a, you know, in communist Russia joke in there somewhere.
Yeah. You know what? I workshopped one in my head, but my internal critic shut it down.
Ah. Did you send the internal critic to the gulag?
No, we're a little bit more progressive inside my head than that. I'll say that sometimes, like, you know, just when we watch like a particularly offensive video at work, or somebody, you know, just kind of brings something up, I'll say that person should be sent to a gulag. But then like the stupid liberal inside me is like, no, nobody should be sent to a gulag.
Yeah, some people probably deserve a gulag.
Yeah, but like I'll say that and then immediately just kind of feel bad for like, okay, I know what I'm doing. I know that I'm exaggerating my disdain for this thing that I've seen. But
you have empathy for this hypothetical person and start inventing why that they are the way that they are, and kind of giving them a background story. And
yeah, so
tree hugger.
What's happening is there are two sides of my head: one that wants to send him to the gulag, and one that is making a high minded plea for clemency.
Also, I think we should step back and say, like, just from like a word design standpoint, gulag is an awesome word.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it? Just rolls right out.
So close to being a palindrome.
Yep,
so
it rolls right out the back of your throat. It's great. Yeah.
Well, if they had a gala at the gulag, it would be a gaylog, and then you've got a palindrome.
That's pretty good. Let's see here. Dennis, how about you? You got a story?
I do. This kind of follows up on something that we've talked about on previous episodes, which is, you know, Konami's whole implosion on the gaming side, at least, and the resulting fate of Silent Hill. Recently, there was a law passed in Nevada that allows skill-based gambling machines, which sounds a lot cooler than it really is. Like, it sounds like you can show up and, like, wager how well you'll do in a game, you know, in a round of Modern Warfare or something like that. But really, what it means is that there will be little mini-games on your slot machines. But really what that means is that it kind of opens up the whole realm of gaming in terms of theming for these type of machines, meaning that now probably your best bet for playing the next Silent Hill game is to look at the slot machine market.
Or on your mobile phone.
Yeah, because the CEO of Konami came out and said that mobile is the future of gaming, which welcome to 2010, doc.
See, has there never been a Silent Hill game on the phone?
There has, actually. There have been like some pseudo light gun over the shoulder shooter games on the iOS.
Pseudo light gun.
Yeah, it's kind of just like it's a tap on these enemies as they come up and then like navigate this maze in first person. It's okay. Like I played it roughly when it was contemporaneous, so like 2010, 2011, something like that. Like yeah, okay. It's you know, a Twitch-based action game set in Silent Hill. Like I will play it. So
I'm actually trying to imagine like a light gun attachment for your iPhone.
Oh yeah.
I'm not seeing anything that doesn't lead to someone getting shot by the TSA or something.
Yeah. But yeah, games of skill, that's always something that like, so when I was a kid driving through the hometown of Mansfield, especially the down parts, there would be these like little pop-up parlors that would come out and say games of skill. And being somebody who really liked video games, I would say, oh, take me there. Like that must be an arcade or something. And then like, no, that's a, like, turns out that a game of skill, like in that parlance is it's a way to get around anti-gambling laws in places that don't allow games of chance. So it's still a slot machine, but you have to press the button to stop the reels is usually what that entails.
Yeah.
What I'm not clear on is why casinos aren't allowed having games of skill. Like what the logic of that is.
I think there's a lot, there's a whole kind of moral gambling kind of mentality that's dropped away since the 60s that just laws have not caught up to.
But what I'm saying is like, even like, what is the moral argument of like you being randomly screwed over by math? That's totally cool. But you being screwed over by dexterity, that's not cool, man.
I think the idea is that outside of Vegas, Ben, I know that your head is spinning and getting ready to explode because you can't talk. So I will expedite this as much as possible. I will save you from this L.
My tongue is squared off right now.
like outside. Oh, chance. That is the devil's opportunity.
The devil's opportunity.
Well, because we do know that, God does not play with dice, right?
Is that some kind of like biblical shit?
No, that's Einstein.
okay, cool.
An actual Albert Einstein quote.
Okay, cool. And that God grew up to be Albert Einstein.
No, that was like his big quote about not liking quantum mechanics.
Mm, yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. I like that. But no, like outside of Vegas or any place where gambling is accepted, God don't play with dice. So, well, okay, if you're betting on your ability to, you know, press this button in time, that's totally cool. Whereas inside, there's probably some kind of force that's saying, well, let's let the algorithms work out because we can kind of not skew that, but like, you know, make it so that the house wins, I guess, or at least kind of control those odds and, you know, make sure that things are designed in such a way that it's not more equitable. But you know what? I don't know shit about what I'm talking about, but that is probably like my conspiratorial, that is definitely my conspiratorial read on the situation, that in places where chance is allowed, where games of chance are allowed, that like there is a definite interest in making sure the games of chance prevail.
Yeah. The real takeaway here is that Silent Hill is totally going to be a slot machine, and I want them to use the big pyramid head sword as the lever to pull.
Ow, it cut me again.
You sinned.
We reduce your further soil tash.
I mean, they could go completely meta, and, you know, my understanding is, like, most of these Silent Hill things, it's, you know, the people are kind of there being pseudo-punished or harassed by their sins, and so the sin could be gambling.
Oh, hell yeah.
Patient or, demon? Or, you know, patient demon? Eddie, fuck.
The jackpot siren is actually the air raid sirens.
Yep, that's pretty good. I like that. Oh man, a Silent Hill themed casino. I would basically just like be like Howard Hughes and rent out the penthouse. Like,
there has to be a casino in Silent Hill, right? Has anyone ever gone to a casino?
No.
That just feels too like.
There have been like strip clubs, and there have been strip clubs, and there may or may not have been like gaming machines in the clubs and stuff. But there's never been like an according to Hoyle, a casino in a Silent Hill game.
Well, isn't Silent Hill set in like the Bible Belt?
It depends on what you're looking at. It's either in Maine or it's in West Virginia.
Okay, so it's either completely in the Bible Belt or not at all in the Bible Belt.
Right. Or I've seen some interpretations of Western Pennsylvania, and also some people say it is in Oregon.
I mean, West Virginia is definitely hell, so.
No, but it's either West Virginia or Western Pennsylvania because of the Centralia connection. But that is one of those things. The Oregon one is less plausible because that mostly has to do with Douglas, the private investigator from Silent Hill 3, him having Portland plates, or no, California plates on his car, and a reference to Portland, but that definitely could have to do with Maine as well. So
wait, people in Portland have California plates?
No, I just fucked up. Thanks for calling attention to it though.
I'm sorry, I was okay. Yeah. I'm here for you, man.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we interact with you, the community. Dennis, what is the question you asked the nice people?
Yeah, the question is on if you've ever played a game well past the point of enjoying it. So what would that game have been, and what kept you playing even though you weren't having fun?
I have to take umbrage, Dennis, in the fact that you used Final Fantasy IV as the photo for this.
Specifically farming for the pink tail.
Okay. Yep, I see that. I meant
no offense to like the larger game or anything like that. I was thinking specifically of that part of
game. The compulsion. Okay, yeah, we've used the pigtail as a totem for the idea of compulsively playing a game. Okay,
yeah.
I can see that.
See, yeah, okay. I didn't realize there was such affection for that game and such a defense out there for it. So
I quietly liked the person who called that into question, and I was going to say like, oh, I'll call Dennis into account for this, but I wanted to leave you wanted to catch you unaware.
So that is my account. It's that specific item.
Okay,
I'm more kind of. You know, my head spinning around the fact that apparently Flans have a whole structure of royalty.
one of my favorite moments of a podcast, Advice Hot Dog. It's a show that recently came back along with You Look Nice Today. Like, You Look Nice Today is back, I guess. They dropped a new episode over the weekend. So that
chart, there's a chart that I see on Twitter every time there's a new episode, which is just like the like modeled projection for when the next episode will be based on the frequency of previous episodes. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they missed or hit their target.
You know what? I would be very curious about that. It had been over 2 years. Two years since they put one out.
I feel like I'd be afraid this would be like the fact that every other year Homestar Runner is coming back.
Yep. you know, it's not too far off with You Look Nice Today, but no, the Advice Hot Dog thing, which I am legitimately so happy that they're back. But they talked about like movies being widely panned. They made up kind of a origin for that phrase by being like, oh, they would throw bread at it in the theaters, and then they said, oh, in Mexico they're widely flanned. Throwing pudding at the flan is just it's the name for those slime monsters in Final Fantasy IV.
That doesn't change the fact that slime monsters apparently take orders from princesses.
Well, you know, they're more of a figurehead.
Okay,
Yeah.
It's a constitutional monarchy.
Yeah, the it's the Flan Prime Minister who usually has most of the authority.
Okay.
Which is to say nothing of the Flan private interests or the private Flan interests that that pull the strings. Let's get into this. I'm not starting the clock until after we read the first question, yeah. By the way, so don't worry. But I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. It appears to be Sir from the picture here. But Roop Pernu writes in saying, "Ride to Hell Retribution. I knew the legends of the game being bad, and that kept me going through the game. Story was really something. Still in back of my head, I was thinking that if this was a title on PS2, it must have been a decent game for the time. I don't know what Ride to Hell Retribution is."
Yeah, I actually had to look this up, and it's worth looking up. I mean, it's horrible, but it's entertaining to look up.
This is Deep Silver. Like, these mm-hmm. are the Saints Row guys.
Did Deep Silver also do Mercenary?
Maybe. Let me look here.
That might have been someone else. Anyway,
that was not them.
Was it? So was this like a close to launch PS2 title? Maybe.
My understanding from what I read is it's sort of Deep Silver, by which I mean like it was apparently this was going to be this like epic biker open world open world game. And then they, I don't know, they ran out of funding, or funding got cut or something like that. And basically it then got like passed off to, and that original game got split up into like four different games. So it was like, oh, the driving portion becomes a driving game and the fighting portion becomes a brawler and stuff like that. And so, Ride to Hell Retribution was like the first one that was released, and it was just horrible because there's basically like a quarter of the game. So, for example, apparently, they had this entire open world city, but they wouldn't let you actually explore more than like a little chunk of it.
Huh. It's so bad I dare you to finish it kind of situation.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, it's, yeah. It's,
They also have, like, if you look up their website, they have like some really funny the developer defending this game. Like, you know, like, y'all haters don't know what the fuck you're talking about. This was actually developed, so Deep Silver was the publisher, I was mistaken. I'm gonna try and pronounce this name. Eutechnics is the name of the studio, which dates back to like the late 80s, but mostly they have made vehicle based games such as Big Mother Truckers, Pimp My Ride, and Big Mother Truckers 2. So,
quite the pedigree.
Yes, both Big Mother Truckers and Big Mother Truckers 2 are games that somebody saw fit to write into the Suggest a Game for WAF form several times over the past week. So, thank you for helping me easily delete some entries into that form. Yeah. Yeah, this is one of those ones. It came out in 2013. That's crazy.
Yeah, a PS2 game. Not look like it.
No, it is not a PS2. Like, if it was on PS2, it would have been impressive. But no, this is like you know, your 2-year-old niece.
Okay,
could
he's
have
saying
been...
if it was on PS2, I might have been impressed. But as a PS3 game, this is bad. Got it. Follow.
Yep. Hey Ben, what's Murph say?
Murph says the record will reflect that I beat Final Fantasy 13 out of spite. Not only is it boring mechanically, the story feels like a fourth grade fan fiction. I had gotten so far in thinking it would get good just around the corner and eventually just hate played it to the end.
Dennis, you're the one who I think had an experience that most matched Murph's. What, yeah. Can you corroborate that?
Yeah, I raced to the final boss fight, and I kept on playing it being like, okay, this is going to totally open up, you know, in just a little bit. This is going to open up. It's going to be good. It won't be so on rails. I hear this game opens up. And yeah, 90 hours in, it opens up. At that point, I was so done with it that I just, you know, went to the final boss. and then looked up online only to find, hey, you're really going to need to grind to beat the final boss. So fuck that. I looked up a YouTube.
By which you mean, this is a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah. So I looked up a YouTube of the ending cutscene rather than beating the final boss.
I've recently been made aware that maybe it's a cliche on the show that I keep saying Krusty's going to get here.
You think?
Krusty's coming, guys. Yeah.
Is it? Because my first inclination was to say, Krusty's going to get here. You'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that is a thing that happens with some regularity.
That's not to imply that it shouldn't.
It's the closest thing that I have to like unfounded hope.
Yeah.
I have a lot of that, but
we need to dash more of your dreams, Cole.
Yeah. Just shatter it upon the rocks.
So is this the Monkey Boy one?
No. Are you talking about Dragon Ball Z? Goku? Are you talking about Goku, David?
I don't know. I remember watching Cole play, or watching Dennis play a Final Fantasy game where you play some sort of monkey boy.
I beat Final Fantasy 13 while I was in Chicago. So.
Okay, so this was not that.
No,
okay.
You're referring to Final Fantasy 9, which is really good.
Or Enslaved Odyssey to the West?
No, specifically Final Fantasy 9 has a guy with a tail. Zidane.
Oh, yes.
You're right. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's the one.
See, I was not crazy in this particular instance.
Hey, David, what's Noah say?
Noah says, Bastion, Little Dew, Cave Story, and many others. My problem is a compulsion to finish a game on its own terms, rather than putting it down when I've experienced everything it has to offer me personally. I feel like I'm letting it down in some way if I don't beat it. Hooray for misplaced empathy. As was mentioned on last week's The Level, this habit has changed now that I have more income than gaming time. The change has been a good one.
Yeah. The problem is, all three of those games are pretty good.
I know the only one of these I've played is Cave Story, and I do know there's like the last platforming dungeon before the final fight, depending on your choices in the game, can be incredibly way too difficult.
Yeah, but those choices that you make set you on a path that prepares you for how difficult that's going to be.
But so maybe they prepared the games... you for how difficult it's going to be. I played the entire game based on having a hover gun.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the machine gun. Yeah.
Yeah, because the problem is, like, that was mainly how I did platforming, but that only happens when you have maxed out experience, and it takes away all your experience when you enter that dungeon.
Mm, yeah. God, I love Cave Stories so much.
I've played and not beat both Bastion and Cave Story. Bastion I just didn't like, I think because I was playing with a controller and it's meant, or sorry, with a keyboard and mouse and it's meant for a controller.
Yeah.
And then Cave Story just because I've peed it out on it a couple times.
Yeah. It'll do is a really, it's a really good Zelda alike. It's a little bit more arcadey, a little bit more simple and less exploration driven, but more about like those individual, like inside a dungeon puzzle kind of things. I dig it. It's pretty good. It's definitely the weakest of those, but
yeah, I really liked the moment to moment of Cave Story and the overall aesthetic. I didn't like figuring out where to go next. I found myself getting lost too easily, and I know that's kind of, you know, hey, where do I go next is kind of part of the Zelda experience, but I have zero patience for that.
Yeah,
I do love that what in Cave Story one of the ways you keep one of the characters alive is when they like fall over and collapse from their injuries, they'll live as long as you just ignore them and walk away.
It's a little bit more complicated than that. Sorry. I'm a huge Cave Story defender, and elaborating on that is definitely a spoiler, so I don't want to do it. You know, for fear of Ben and his constitution, you see.
I don't care.
Cave Story's great. Let's see here, Dennis, what does David say?
David says, League of Legends. It was the only game my friends were playing at the time, and I wanted to play with them. So I suffered through a few months of games until a few other people started to burn out, and I suggested we try something else.
Yeah, and then he goes on to say, also, I'm kind of sad that FF4 is the cover art for this, and then five people.
I'm sorry.
If you don't know, you did something very wrong, you know?
What do I have to do to make it up?
I don't know. Say you're sorry three times.
Yeah. Next week's multiplayer will be, how much do you like Final Fantasy IV?
That's a good game.
Tell me how great
next
it
week's,
is.
Next week's episode is going to be a bonus level about Final Fantasy IV.
You have a week to play it.
Next week.
Yeah, I was going to say, start it now.
It's only 30 hours. Come on, guys.
Is it really that short?
Yeah, it is one of the shorter Final Fantasies.
That's Memorial Day weekend. Hey.
No, let's not do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's not.
Oh God, in jest. No. League of Legends, that is a game I have no inroads into.
Same here.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a legit game, but it would be a tough road to follow if you weren't into it.
In David's case, it was too legit to quit.
Too legit to start. let's see here. I'm going to read, let's see here, Carlos, who writes in saying, I played about 10 hours of Alpha Protocol on WAF's recommendation, and I realized that while I trust Duckfeed's taste implicitly, I'm just not one for games that are too rooted in, quote, reality.
Do you know that high fantasy?
I feel like
that their stealth mechanics are not rooted in reality.
Yep.
Well, the problem is that all of Alpha Protocol's mechanics are awful. It's just the rest of the game is amazing.
I don't know if I'd say that.
I guess I should say, on the PC, hacking and lockpicking are, particularly hacking, is completely undoable.
Yeah, notoriously broken.
But
yeah, I wouldn't.
Hacking is the word find, correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's where
hacking
you have to
is the word find. However, can you do that with the mouse and keyboard separately at the same time? And with, you know, super high mouse sensitivity?
I wonder if that's one that they added controller support for, because I have it on PC, but when we did it for the show, I played the copy that I bought drunk on Amazon during the recording of a level. So, like, I played it on Xbox
To be fair, I think it's a rule that every GameStop has at least two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have to. Otherwise, the government shuts them down.
Yeah. Otherwise, they send in Alpha Protocol.
Yep. They send in Michael Thornton. Let's see here. Ben, what does Tanner say?
Tanner says, I go through this phase with every Final Fantasy game past 15. It was pretty soul-crushing to get 40-plus hours into the Final Fantasy 13, only to have the best part of the game robbed from me by a corrupted save.
Oh, shit.
I just don't think I can do it again. Conversely, Amnesia, Outlast, and games of that ilk are almost always games I am relieved to finish. They share the quality of the Soul series, in which I often find myself saying, thank fuck I never have to do that again.
Yeah, I could see Amnesia. I have not played Outlast. The Souls games, those just get better every time you go through it.
Yeah, get easier.
Mm. Can you elaborate on that distinction for me?
Well, so I was thinking about Ornstein and Smough specifically as this bouncing off point. Like the first time I played through, I was stuck on them forever, and I hated it. Mm. And then, you know, eventually I got through and that memory faded. And the second time I got to them, maybe it's because I was summoning in help or, you know, whatever, what have you. But it wasn't nearly as difficult. However, if I, you know, when I was thinking about starting a second playthrough, that was a very high, like, but then I'm going to get to Ornstein and Smough and I'm not going to want to play past that. Like, I was surprised that it got easier the second time around versus being another slog.
Knowledge compresses space.
Although I can understand this thing, because like I cannot imagine playing through like Ravenholt again.
Oh, from Half-Life 2?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It gets better.
Yeah, I mean, just
you
like...
You stop being terrified. You get numb to it.
Yeah, familiarity is the best anesthetic. You cut one. You've had one leg cut off by a doctor. You know what? Second one, no problem. It's a second arrow, man.
No. You won't hate playing this game again. You'll be numb to it. Totally better.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You'll forget how to feel. It's great.
Yeah. Let's hear, David, what's Evan say?
Evan says, every year or two, I get deep into Mountain Blade and play it compulsively for 30 to 30, 45 hours. It always starts out awesome, but the last 10 to 20 hours are me algorithmically accomplishing tasks without getting any real enjoyment out of it. The thing that keeps me going is that I usually only play it when I'm dealing with depression, which tends to come out of nowhere and pass after a week. It turns out that having something that never actually ends and that I can play with an audiobook going is a really good way to keep me occupied while I ride out. Depression is a hell of a drug.
That it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, there's a kind of a place for that game that you can play, like, mechanically and without joy. Mm-hmm. You know, something that just kind of, like, smooths out the highs and the lows and gives you something to do with your hands and easy decisions to make.
Yeah. Right. And I also know I definitely, depression's not something I've experienced, but I know, like, there's certain like books or games or stuff like that that are kind of my go-to when like, things kind of suck. So I can kind of understand that. You know, there's kind of some comfort in, having something to go back to, even if you kind of get done with it, right?
Yeah.
Yep. We should have a sidebar, because I would say Civilization, Revolution, and Star Talk would be my two things that meet that.
Star Talk?
Yeah, it's a podcast.
Yep.
Okay.
That's Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's hear Dennis. What does Christopher say?
Christopher says, I've been a World of Warcraft player for 10 years, and I'd say I've enjoyed probably about 6 of those. There have been long stretches between content updates or expansions where I find myself logging in just to dick around for 10 or 15 minutes, then log out again. I always end up finding a reason to keep playing, but I couldn't tell you why at this point. It's not even a social thing. I've never really had a group I played with. I may have a problem.
You may just have a habit.
Yeah, familiar.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you, like it just may just be a thing that you do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that like if there's a problem with that necessarily.
But it's his version. Like we just talked about the familiar, easy to play game that you can do without much investment or without much mental investment anyway.
Yeah.
I know, like, all through my undergrad, that was kind of me and Kingdom of Loathing. It's just, like, it was kind of almost a hobby, mental zen or whatever.
Well, I mean, I will expand on what I said about sometimes you need something that evens out the highs and the lows. Like, there's a reason that people take up gardening, like, it's a way to rack up some easy wins, right?
Hmm.
Just the idea of like, okay, I can go in and do these things that I know and maybe experience something new, maybe not, but like I will do this prescribed set of motions and I will derive a sense of satisfaction at the end of it. I don't know if that's like playing a game beyond when you enjoy it or your relationship with it evolving.
Yeah. As a side note, I think your garden's much different than mine, because for me, a garden is a way to rack up some easy kills.
What kind of garden do you have? Is it some kind of living flesh garden? What's going
no,
on?
I'm just saying, plants do not last long in my garden.
Yeah.
I am a plant murderer.
That's just the closest analog I could find for the thing that I had to say. Let's see here. Let's do ours at the end. I'd like to get through as many of the listener responses as we can. Franz says, Dark Souls 2, specifically the Crown of the Sunken King DLC, and more specifically, Illana. I'd been stuck at the boss fight for over a month, but kept trying night after night. Ornstein, Smough, Capra and the ancient dragon combined weren't this frustrating. I guess it was pure stubbornness that kept me going. Until I finally managed to beat her and got that big dragon boss after her on the first go. I suddenly liked the game a lot more, knowing she wasn't in it anymore.
Nice.
That is a pretty, yeah, Alana's kind of a very tough go. I don't like that boss fight an awful lot. I think that it is meant, it is A, tuned for co-op, and B, tuned to screw you when you try to do co-op. And I, like, I just, I bounced off of that, well beyond the release of both the Iron King and Ivory King DLCs, to the point where it just, yeah, I had to power through her to get to the rest of that sweet, sweet content. So, yeah. Yeah. Let's see here, Ben, what does Phil say?
Phil says, I've done this several times with MMOs. I'd stopped playing because I was bored with it, and after a year or two, forgot why I stopped playing, resubscribe and reinstall it, play for 5 minutes, and suddenly remember why I stopped playing. Yet I know I'll do it again in a year or two because apparently I have MMO-nesia or something like that.
Monesia.
I like Monesia.
Yeah.
Monesia.
Isn't that that's,
that sounds like
90s?
Something I should hear, like the a drug company should produce. Like, yo, ask your doctor about once daily Monesia.
Side effects may include grinding.
Dinging. Oh, God, you don't want to know what dinging is. Yeah. Huh. That falls into the WoW thing. I don't know that we have too much more to say about that.
If you
I feel like
for more than
I would
hours,
like to sometime do a multiplayer asking people about kind of their, I don't know, their Zen games, you know, kind of their games that they just sort of play when they want to play on autopilot, because I feel like we're getting some interesting kind of side information on that I'd like to, it'd be cool to dig more into.
There's Bleed, right?
Yeah,
like,
Bleed.
And I wonder if what we're hitting on here isn't so much like a lack of enjoyment, like, oh, you played this after you stopped liking it, and if it's more like, oh, you played it after there ceased being novelty.
Sure, yeah.
Which I'm not calling into question anybody's responses, but like that's a little bit of what I'm seeing.
Sure, and I feel like that's interesting to me, particularly because, like, you know, that compared to the fact that, like, you know, chess hasn't changed since what, like, Renaissance era, I think, something like that.
As an expert on chess,
yeah. Well,
there was no end to that sentence. I'm sorry.
My point is, like, you know, like, chess doesn't change, football doesn't change, stuff like that. So like. Just, I know, I find kind of that concept interesting.
But Chessball still can't find any investors. Dear God, I'm ruined.
Freaking chess boxing, though.
What?
Chess boxing? That is an actual sport where you alternate rounds of boxing with rounds of chess.
What is a round of chess?
Like, you play like a timer, right? Oh, no, yeah, there's no timer. It's whoever gets a checkmate or a knockout first wins. But you play for a certain amount of time on the chessboard.
Well, okay.
You guys know about like Dizzy T-ball, like where I've tried to pioneer Dizzy darts.
You should do that at a bar when you mix drinking into the equation.
Yeah, I never understood why people thought drinking and darts, like, of all the games you could play in drunk. When drunk, why would you play the one where you have tiny weapons?
Well, I mean, would you rather them play that or Dizzy Jarts?
Yeah.
I'm still pissed right now that Jarts is no longer a thing. That was the coolest game.
Jarts was so fun. For people on this podcast who don't know, Jarts is lawn darts, where you would throw tiny spears at each other's feet.
Yeah, we are talking like legitimately able to kill people, like,
yeah, like skull collapsers. It was great. Yeah, we like my dad had a jart set which we had to play in the backyard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, my basement There's like the you know, it's like there's this, some storage units and there's some like laundry machines and such. But there's also a dartboard that I throw darts at every time I put in a load of laundry and change stuff when I'm down there. And I've started keeping score, but I also keep track of when my downstairs neighbor does them too. So I'm keeping a score of him versus me.
Does he know that you're competing?
No, he doesn't.
Oh, wait, no, as a side note, jarts are completely softcore. The ones I was talking about were actually like pointed.
No, they may have adjusted the jarts formula in order to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm looking on eBay. I want to know, can I get lawn darts?
I think that they're like legit. You will get SWAT teamed illegal. people speak of them only in hushed tones.
Have you guys heard of this new craze of jarting? It's when you call in someone playing jarts in the backyard.
It's all the rage on 4chan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Why don't we triple team Jala's response?
Cool.
So, David, read the first one.
Sure. Festus Quest. I don't know why. Perhaps it was the only game available.
Dennis, second one.
Digimon Card Battle. The final boss is insane, and it took tedious deck modification and a whole lot of luck to eventually actually beat him hours later. In that particular case, because I enjoyed the game so much, I wanted to see it through to the end.
And Ben.
Capcom versus SNK2. What is SNK2?
Street Fighter?
SNK was a fighting game developer that did a whole bunch of stuff, like King of Fighters and stuff.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Sorry, brief
aside. Yeah, I guess SNK does not stand for Street Fighter. No. I'm just going to see myself out.
All right. Capcom versus SNK2. My boyfriend of the time and I tag teamed the game, each selecting a fighter. We played constantly enough that I developed a callus on my left thumb. Thanks, Dreamcast controller. We had the import version before it ported to PS2. When we kicked ass and our score was high enough, we kept getting the special end bosses. And the first time we fought God Rugal, we had no idea how to handle him and had to restart for what seemed like infinity. But we beat him and then rinse wash repeated in order to perfect our tactics.
Hmm. Yeah. Fester's Quest, I think, is a little bit underrated, actually.
I've never even heard of that.
It's like an NES game. It is vaunted in the annals of the worst games of all time. But
okay.
I think it's just one of those things that was a bad experience to play.
And you know,
good.
You just got to spend some time with it. You got to let it fester, and then.
No, we did.
I want to throw in kind of a side one on Digimon Card Battle, the Pokemon trading card game.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
It's so good, but it's written in the rules that if you play through your entire deck of cards, you lose. So at least in the card game, I don't know if anyone actually did this in tournaments. One of the gems was just entirely based around like drawing out the fight as much as possible and getting you to play as many cards as possible, so you'd lose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I know.
Yeah, it's been way too long since I played that. I remember liking it very much. But
yeah,
that was good. That is a weird rule.
Cole, what were you going to say?
Oh, you know what? I have no recollection. I think I was going to move us on. Yeah. But that's us on time. I don't know that I have an answer for this, honestly. Like, I think that I'm pretty much, aside from the games that I play for assignment, I tend to bail out of games that lose my interest. Let's go. Like, yeah, Ben, how about you?
Skyrim.
Yep. You just compulsively saw that one through to the end of the main story?
Yeah, I would also say maybe Far Cry 2, maybe. Even though there are cool parts to it, it's kind of a little bit of a slog. Not like Far Cry 3 or 4.
Which are good. I couldn't read into your tone there.
Yeah, they're all the same game.
Okay, cool.
Wait. Far Cry 2 is is definitely worse.
David, how about you?
That sort of depends on whether you want to hear me complain about Dead Island again. So yeah, Dead Island would probably be the thing, and then like after 15 minutes into Stanley Parable, I was definitely hate playing that.
Why? like no given path of that lasts more than 15 minutes.
Until they just start resetting that path again, or be like, why don't you wait in an elevator for a indeterminate amount of time, or any of the other things they do to not respect your time in that game.
We're just never going to agree about this.
Yes, I know.
I'm just going to say that the museum path actually takes longer than 15 minutes if you actually want to go around and listen to all the exhibits.
Oh, that's more of a... Okay, so my off-the-cuff remark wasn't thoroughly researched. I'm sorry. But that's more of a dev secret kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
I got to that.
I think that was the first legitimate ending I got to.
Oh. Dennis, how about you?
I'm going to have to say Super Mario or New Super Mario Bros. Wii.
Hmm.
So it's a co-op game. And so that's attractive to me. And I played it because, and I'm playing it again now because, it's a fun way to spend time with Jen. However, I have to be very cognizant that I will reach a point where if we kind of die on a level too many times, I just go to a very bad place and I start playing recklessly. I start making more mistakes. I start getting angry. And then I decide that the only way to cure my frustration is to beat the level,
mm-hmm.
Which never works out well.
You got to exercise the demon.
Yeah. So I can't remember the last time I talked about it, but we played it a while ago and just, we wound up getting away from it because we were getting to harder levels and it was too difficult. And then now we're coming back to it, but now with very much the mentality of, okay, if we get stuck on something, we're going to put it down before we get to the point of bickering between each other and blaming each other for stuff. And it is a very divisive co-op game. I will say that. So
that is a hell of a statement.
Yes.
Well, that sure sounds like we did a multiplayer, guys. Yeah. I'm sorry for anybody that we didn't get to. We're trying to control the length of these recording sessions. And I will definitely take the blame for this if we didn't get to you on that. But we're trying to put a hard cap on responses at about like 25 minutes. So launch all of your hate at me. But do not let this discourage you from responding in the future at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic problem to have. I'm so grateful that we have so many people responding. Like, that's really cool.
Like, universally really good responses. So we cannot overstate how appreciative we are that you guys come out in force every Tuesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week. Behind the scenes, behind the curtain, David has requested to go first, and I will throw off to him.
Sure. I wanted to go first because I'm real quick going to kind of side swoop Joshua Suki. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that last name correctly.
Okay.
His answer to the multiplayer, because it's timely, which is Shadow of Mordor, mainly because he burned himself out on side quests. And that's rather relevant because what I've been playing this week is Shadow of Mordor.
Oh.
So, so far, I'm...
Hate it.
Huh? Not yet. So far, I mean, I am doing a lot of side quests, so I can see that being a risk, but it's mainly because this is a game that it's just kind of fun to dick around in.
That's true.
Yeah, I really dig. It kind of seems like it's sort of a mashup of like the Batman games, Assassin's Creed, and Far Cry, which is
really
a lot of fun. And I really enjoy kind of the core gameplay. I never really got the gameplay in the Batman games. It was always, just an epic struggle to, survive any given fight. Whereas this game, I feel like I'm really able to do some cool stuff. So I don't know, maybe Ben would be the one I'd have to ask on this. If it feels different, if they did something different, or if it's just I got better, or what the deal is. But I'm really enjoying the core gameplay. It's I know. I'm really liking a lot about it. I like, you know, they've got this thing where, you know, kind of your main character is, you know, possessed by this wraith and, you know, gives you supernatural powers. And I really like the way the writing's handled for that, where it's kind of just the two characters just being completely casual, and, you know, most of the cutscenes where they're involved is just them, you know, kind of having conversations. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I really like the fact they didn't feel the need to, like, have every conversation be this, like, epic reminder of, like, OMG, I'm possessed by a ghost.
It felt very much like The Odd Couple, like all of their scenes together. It's like, well, we happen to be sharing the same body.
Yeah, they're not apartment mates, and they're not roommates, they're body mates.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about the level of violence in the game?
What do you mean?
No, just in terms of, like, how brutal it is.
Showing orcs the business end of your sword in their face.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I feel like I might be the wrong person to ask about that.
I'm specifically asking you about that because, like, is it gratifying to you as a person who tends to enjoy stuff of the I'm gonna say mindlessly brutal, but don't, like, put the emphasis on, like,
sure, no,
put,
yeah, no,
put the
I,
emphasis
I know
on the brutal, not the mindless part. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I enjoy it overall. I really like that the I feel like the counter mechanics and that sort of thing from, like, an animation standpoint, I feel like it being done with weapons works a lot better from a mechanic and animation standpoint than, like, the unarmed blocks do in the Batman games.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I really like is that a lot of the finishing moves are you just shanking people.
Like, so just, Oz style?
Say that again?
Like Oz style, just rapidly just puncturing their lung?
Yeah, exactly. Like, just pistoning your knife into the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know, I kind of like that from, you know, kind of being more realistic. If I wanted to get really pedantic, it does annoy me then the cutscenes he blocks with the edge of his sword, because that's a horrible idea. But
because it'll shatter, or
yeah, okay. It'll big time damage the blade very quickly. So, but yeah, I really like the animation. The other thing I really like is they sort of have, and I realize, I think this is going to make no sense to anyone who hasn't played it, hasn't seen it, but, you know, they kind of have, you know, your character is normally this, you know, ranger, but then when you're, you know, using one of the supernatural powers, you kind of then go into, you know, your wraith mode, and so your character is now this kind of glowing, ghostly elf. And I really like they do a lot of things where, you know, When you're doing something, even, like, in the middle of combat where you're drawing on your supernatural abilities, you'll just, like, momentarily switch over to, you know, being the wraith character while you're doing it.
Hmm.
So, for example, if two enemies attack you at once, you have to quickly press the counter button twice, and your character will, block the first first strike, and then, like, the wraith will kind of do, like, an Agent Smith effect and, like, block the second one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, like, there's a lot of, like, good, like, little things, or, like, if you jump off of a jump off of a ledge, you know, normally you'll just kind of, like, parkour, you know, land, but if you jump off of something that there's, like, no way a human could survive that, you'll switch, you'll turn into the wraith and land.
Oh, wow.
So, like, there's a lot of cool things like that that they put in.
Hmm.
I like that. The What they call it, the not the minion system, the nemesis system.
Yeah, the nemesis.
Yeah, that's really well done. I feel like it does a really good job of, you know, giving you varied enemies to face.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, it does have a couple weak points. You know, some of the weaknesses enemies can have are just like incredibly, almost like mindlessly easy to exploit. Particularly enemies that can be killed in one hit by either a ranged headshot or a sneak attack.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other hand,
I feel like that occurs less and less as the game goes on.
Okay, so that could be a thing. Because like I have been kind of like just running around like fighting guys instead of advancing the story. So that very well could be the case. On the other hand, like I had a guy early on, one of the abilities basically turns an enemy into the Highlander, where they'll keep coming back to life unless you kill them with a decapitation.
Huh.
And like each time they come back to life, they're like more beat up. So like this guy, like he not only that, but there's another ability where normally the enemies are just out around doing stuff, but one of the traits they can have is they'll actually come after you, and like you'll be in the middle of a mission and they'll show up and like start fighting you. And so he had this, but like each, I killed him like three times, and like the first time his skin turns like this, you know, kind of like corpse white. The second time, like he didn't have a nose anymore. And then, like, the third time, he was, like, all scarred up, and then finally, death took. But, yeah, so...
Because you decapitated him, or just because you killed him regular enough times?
I did not. Like, basically, there's a chance that he'll come back, or a chance they won't. I did not. I ended up slitting his throat, actually. But, it is a thing, although I have heard of, you know, reading online, apparently some players just getting screwed over by enemies that, you know, both come back to life and are almost unbeatable.
Yeah, so that's, you know, one thing. That's one thing I want you to kind of be a guinea pig for. So, like, when I played it, I found that, like, there was one person in particular that I could not kill, even when he was, like, low level, and, like, that was my eventual nemesis, so... Let me know if there's, like, one person who seems impossible to kill for some reason.
Sure. I'll have to see. Like, one thing I will say, which is, you know, it's one of those things that I don't know if it was meant to be a mechanic, but ends up being a mechanic, is I at least often end up big time doing hit and run. So, like, okay. The game, you know, so doing things where, like, you know, going way out of my way to like lure captains next to campfires so that I can like cause them to explode and set the dude on fire, and you know, like just kind of, you know, having them chase me and just like whittling down and killing all their friends with arrows and stuff like that. So I'll be interested to see that. So I this is something I really look forward to seeing what they do in any expansions with this system, because I could see this being something that becomes even more fun once they kind of expand it out.
So I expect to see two things in June, like here in a couple weeks at E3. A Shadow of Mordor 2, because this was both a commercial success and a critical success. So I can see Monolith wanting to get something new out as soon as possible.
Get on that, AAA devs.
I guess. Well, it's one of those things. Like they got off to a really, really good start, and I'm going to be very curious about how they expand on this. Like I can only, you know, unless they make a very big mistake, I could see them, you know, it'd be very hard to mess this up, right? Mm-hmm. I would also expect to see a bunch of people trying to co-opt is the wrong word. But kind of like adopt some of these, you know, adopt some aspects of the Nemesis system, you know, in a way that says like, hey, you know, we're here too, and this is a good idea, and we're going to get this here. Like that, I think, is what makes Shadow of Mordor a very important game.
Yeah, yeah.
right?
Yeah, I'm really hoping this becomes part of the vocabulary.
Yeah.
I would say I don't really want to, you know, go real deep into this, but I feel like another thing that I wish other games would learn from this is I feel like they did a really good job of kind of staking out their territory in terms of, it seems like they really tried to set up, like, here's a way we can make the game we wanted to make, but kind of, like, set things up so that we're not going to screw up the Lord of the Rings lore.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, like, you know, Lord of the Rings is a setting where magic is not common, so, you know, having him be possessed by the Wraith is maybe a little contrived and kind not doesn't really make sense, but like it's you know it at least works. It's tolerable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like they're walking the right side of the edge, I think, which
right,
is
exactly.
Which is we're still going to let you do cool stuff, but we're going to at least try and be respectful of the continuity for you people who care right. about that.
Right. And they do put in some like pretty legitimate call outs to some of the lore, some of the fairly obscure stuff, like making some allusions to the different ways the afterlife works for humans versus the elves, stuff like that.
I forget, is Talion an elf or is he human?
Main character is a human. The guy who's possessing him's an elf.
Okay.
So it's pretty good. One other thing that just really made my day that I want to call out is one of the plot points is there's this orc called Ratbag that is basically incompetent, but he's willing to sell out the other orcs, so you're kind of helping him fall up through the ranks by like just assassinating anyone that gets in his way.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty funny, but then there's one mission where he's about to be executed, and he's like trying to as you're getting in position to save him, he's trying to reason with his captor and explaining why they can't do this. and I'm listening to this, and I'm struck. I'm like, wait a minute. Was that Futurama's Hermes Conrad explaining orcish bureaucracy? And I looked it up on IMDb, and it is in fact Phil LaMarr who voices Hermes.
Noted voice
who
actor.
Is the voice of this character?
Yeah, Phil LaMarr's all over the place. Once you know to listen for him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so pretty great. Really makes my day because I don't think it's particularly the same voice, but like for that one dialogue segment, this was Hermes infiltrating the bureaucracy of Soren's army.
That just reminds me, my niece, okay, so my 9-year-old niece fucking loves Futurama.
That's awesome.
I know, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she was down here. My brother has been raising her to be as out of touch with her generation as possible. basically trying to make her as much like me and him as possible, I guess. So, you don't have to ask her because she'll just, say, like, can we watch blank or blank? But her favorite shows are Futurama and 30 Rock. Nice. Again, this is somebody who was born the year that 30 Rock came out. So, so yeah. But yeah. That seemed like a reasonable anecdote to bring out. And yeah. Phil LaMarr also has a storied history with voicing stuff in video games.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until I looked him up on IMDb. He's been in a lot of stuff and really, really good roles in this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was Redis in Final Fantasy XII. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
he was Ramza in the Final Fantasy Tactics updates. Yeah, all of nice. Those are things. He is a tremendously talented actor, which you would not guess from watching him in Mad TV, which was my first exposure to him as Phil LaMarr. Yeah. Let's see here. Anything else about Shadow of Mordor, David?
No. Just one other game, just kind of a 5-minute thumbnail. Was at a hackathon this weekend and played a little bit of Towerfall Ascension. That's a lot of fun, particularly the co-op mode, and I am horrible at it. So, so basically, arrow shooting game, multiplayer game with friendly fire, and you all share a finite amount of arrows to the point where in the co-op you have to like venture through, these levels. If you don't pick up all your arrows, you then don't have them on the next level. It's really a legit game.
Yeah, it's it is a combination. Let's see here, Smash Brothers, Worms, and Angry Birds.
Yeah, the other one it reminds me of is what was the like the Mario Brothers game that was like a versus game like way back in the day where like you like headbutted the stage below people to like flip them or whatever.
Oh, that's Mario Brothers.
Yeah, okay, just Mario Brothers?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it also kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah. Should I buy the Jackbox Party Pack for my housewarming party, do you think, Dennis?
I have literally never played it with a group where someone hasn't decided to go buy it after we've played it.
Okay.
Like, it's that good. So,
okay, cool.
As long as you've got something to play it on, so you've got a is it on PS4?
I've got multiple things. I've got the PC plugged into the PC.
Okay, yeah, that'll work. Yeah, it's as long
Wait,
as
you
yeah,
have a
that, that'll
PC
work just fine.
Plugged?
Don't plugged question me, PC? Ben.
Peception.
I knew he meant another.
Hey, recursion is an important
thing.
Part of computing.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to take us in that direction aside from Towerfall, but those, party games are important. So you played this, like, this is exclusively a local multiplayer game.
I don't know. We were playing it local multiplayer.
I believe it's one of those ones that that you can only play with a bunch of people. So you played it in the right in the right environment.
Yeah. So, I liked, I know. Also, because I am awful, I like the fact that it has a co-op mode.
Yeah.
And the co-op mode actually seems fairly sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
There's boss fights and enemies that just happen to look a lot like your friends.
I could see that being pretty fun.
Yeah.
You guys mind if I go next?
Go ahead.
No. Yeah. So I only have one. It is a game that came out on Steam here recently. It's called Dark Echo.
Okay.
So this was kind of, I'm led to believe, initially it's an iPhone and Android game that was brought to Steam Greenlight. And I just kind of caught it on a sale. It was like $2. I'm like, oh, I'll check this out because it looks pretty intriguing. It's pretty great. I kind of went up and down with it in terms of my opinion, but at least where I left it off, it is definitely one of the most inventive, kind of simple games that I've played. So the idea is that you are playing in a world where you cannot actually see. All right.
Okay.
It's kind of like a top down kind of navigation kind of game. And, you don't see the actual walls of the maze or the environments that you are, that you're navigating. You only see the echoes of the sounds that you are making, not even if you run into it, but like as you take steps, as you take unsilenced steps or throw rocks or clap in the game, you have these kind of like lines that come out from your from your character, like radially, like in a vector graphics kind of style. And if they hit something that you cannot pass, then they will bounce off of that. And so if you clap very loudly by holding down the button and releasing it, then it will, put out a bunch of lines that travel very far. And you can actually see as they bounce off of stuff, wherever sound doesn't go, then that must be a wall, right? Mm-hmm. But, so you like the first couple levels have you navigating space using this to kind of describe the space by way of this visual metaphor for sound as it bounces off of walls, right? But pretty soon it starts introducing these enemies that can hear you and track you by the sound you make. Okay? So all
so
of a sudden...
So it's Daredevil the game.
A little bit. Like, it was more of a House of Leaves kind of thing for me because I am, I am who I am. The areas that you cannot walk, you know, because they're dangerous or whatever, are highlighted in red. And there are these enemies, these indescript monsters that will come after you if any of your sound waves or lines hit them, and kind of like chase you through the maze as you go along. And so it becomes a little bit of a horror stealth game as you go along, figuring out ways to kind of distract them. And eventually it gives you a way to throw rocks at walls to create sound. That becomes your way of describing space by way of this thing that you cannot see. So it becomes a combination of like the Unfinished Swan and House of Leaves as you're going along and throwing these rocks in order to see the way that these sound waves bounce off of the walls to describe the places that you can go against all of these other hazards that you're seeing as they go along. And like, there are some places where it goes too far. Like, where I stopped about 30 levels in was, you know, when I started introducing like, oh, now there's stuff that blocks your view of the sound waves so that you cannot actually see a full map of what you're seeing. And also there is like topology to this where there are slopes that you can't perceive as you go along, where it's very hard to perceive as you go along, and it drops you into either water, which creates more sound no matter how quickly you walk, or into spikes, which kills you instantly. So that was a little bit too far. But this is kind of the most inventive way that I've seen to kind of play with the way that you visualize space as it relates to audio. And because of that, I think it's really worth playing in a lot of ways.
Nice.
Does it have chickens?
Not that I've seen. Oh, damn it. Now I see what you've done, Dennis. It is a little bit more basic than Sherida's game is. Okay. Dennis, what is the name of that game? I'm sorry. Beyond Eyes.
Oh, Beyond Eyes.
Yep. Beyond Eyes. It's a little bit more basic than Beyond Eyes is. You know, this is made in Unity. It is strictly like 2D. It's mimicking vector, you know, art, and because of that, I really, really enjoy it. And it, you know, when it throws a new color at you, it really kind of like sticks out. Because normally it's, you know, white on black. There are no chickens as far as I can see. There are indescribable horrors insofar as I can only see the effect they make on the environment. So I cannot describe the actual horror that is making the effect on the environment.
Oh, yeah. It's like that classic story where, you know, four blind men are trying to describe Cthulhu.
Yep. It's just four blind men saying, oh, I've got a rope. I've got a rope. I've got a rope. You all have a tentacle. Fuck you. Yeah. This is really good. And it was only upon a Google. Like, I had a hunch in my gut when I played it that I was like, oh, this could totally be a mobile game. And it probably totally is. And yes, their website says it is available. I played it on my PC with surround sound and on an Xbox controller. And it worked just fine. So I would recommend playing it that way. But however you can play it, it's pretty cool. It's called Dark Echo.
Nice.
Yeah.
That does sound cool.
Worth the $2?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Any other questions about that?
Can you see yourself playing it in the future?
I would like to take another crack at it. I don't know if I just ran out of patience. Like, an hour is roughly when I start looking for other things to do. And I played about an hour of it tonight. So maybe I will be able to get past it. But, like, I don't know. It feels like something that kind of maybe thrives on its simplicity a little bit. The view obfuscating and the kind of topology or introducing slopes into the matter kind of seem like a bridge too far to me. And I think that I might be content to maybe walk away from it with the positive impression that I have so far. Like, 30 levels of a $2 experience, not too bad, you know?
Mm-hmm. If you can't see yourself playing it in the future, can you hear yourself playing it in the future?
Oh, absolutely. To the finish. Oh, that's a good one. And with that terrible pun, Ben, do you have a game that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I've been playing Far Cry 4, so I've dug a little bit deeper than 10 minutes into it, And it is a Far Cry game. So it is pretty much the same game as Far Cry 3. There is a different narrative to it. The narrative is not bad. I think one interesting mechanic they added that was not in the previous game is you kind of control the rebel army a little bit, and so you kind of make decisions about how they're going to go about doing things. So that's been kind of interesting so far. But yeah, I've only probably played maybe 4 or 5 hours of it, I think. So I still definitely have a ways to go. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what decisions have you made so far?
I've only made one.
Okay.
So the first one. Yeah, I don't, perhaps I shouldn't give anything away about it, but yeah. Basically, there's different leaders within the group, and they have different ideas about how to do things, and so you kind of have to side with one or the other of them. So yeah, that makes kind of a few interesting decisions, but yeah.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm interested to see how you go with this, just because like this is a game I feel like does more choices right, so I'm really interested to see who you side with on some of these. So.
Yeah, I have a feeling that it's not gonna be like here is option A, and it's, you know, this person is going to be very hard line this direction, and here's option B, and I think it's going to be more like very case to case, you know, what to do, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's basically the one person is like pragmatic and pragmatic/ruthless and progressive, and the other person is like idealistic and regressive. So it plays a lot with like, do you care more about like doing stuff that maybe kind of the right thing, but is maybe, like not good for society, or like things like that.
That's a weird statement. Do you care about doing things that are not the right thing, but are not good? What?
It's things like eventually they'll get to things where it's like, do you want to like, capture the poppy field so we can afford to have schools, or do you want to burn them because opium kind of wrecks up people's lives?
Okay. So it introduces some more gray areas to it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Is there a definite kind of gameplay benefit to either of them?
Not that I have seen. I think it's just like, do you want the safe house you eventually end up in to be destroyed or not destroyed?
Okay.
But you still get the safe house. Like, it's, I don't think there's any difference. It's just dialogue.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be kind of a bummer if they don't reinforce the decisions that you make, but...
Do you find more pleasing?
Are they just is it just focus group of the game?
I know. Yeah, well, and you also get like pagan men like commenting on your choices. So some of those are pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
The one interesting mechanic, and I haven't done this yet, so. But on the map, they have different fortresses scattered across the map. So I haven't done any of these missions, but they just say that they're very hard. And if you continue doing storyline missions, you can kind of make them easier when you attempt them eventually. So that is one thing of interest that I haven't seen in previous games, but I have not done that one yet. Hmm. So otherwise, a lot of the same mechanics are in place where... there's a lot of side missions. There's a lot of tower climbing, and there's a lot of they did make the item inventory a lot easier, where you can just quick sell all of the superfluous items and only keep like the crafting items. So I appreciate that. But yeah.
When you say tower climbing, are you talking about playing an Assassin's Creed game?
Kind of.
Okay.
It's just first person.
By which
person
you mean any
person.
Ubisoft game.
Yeah. Okay. That's a bummer.
That's a weird thing to cling to, I know.
What's the most exotic thing you've killed,
Ben? Tower climbing while being attacked by eagles.
There was a honey badger mission where I killed honey badgers, and they were making pretty obvious references to the honey badger video.
I fucking hate it when games lean into memes.
I don't know. I like the way they did the writing for this one.
I like it when Borderlands 2 does it because it's a surprise. I wasn't as big of a fan when Far Cry 4 did it. We'll see if it improves, I don't know.
Is it a surprise when your whole game is that?
Oh, Borderlands 2?
Yeah.
Well,
that's not the whole game.
Okay, sorry.
I feel like Borderlands 2 gets a lot of unfair shit thrown at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that was my first experience it back. With it. I don't... I don't know if they made as many pop culture references in the first one. I had not played that one, but yeah. I mean, if they continue doing that in every game, I could see that easily wearing out its welcome. But
is this the honey badger one where they where the honey badger ate the guy's family?
I do not know. I was defending them from three people.
Okay. Cause I like there is one where basically like the setup is you get a guy who's like, kill these honey badgers, you know, they ate my family, and your character starts making jokes about the honey badger meme, and they're like, yeah. Oh wait, you're serious? They actually ate your I'm so sorry. And that entertained me.
But still, what is the most exotic thing you've killed?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I think right now, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess honey badger, or there's been Bengal tigers. Some type of fish, but I forget which kind. It might have been a dead fish, something like that. Death fish. That's like the name of it.
All right.
I don't know. Nothing too crazy. I've shot eagles from a distance, but I haven't skinned them yet. So I don't consider that a confirmed kill.
You haven't taken their outsides?
I haven't taken their outsides and their insides apart. So yeah.
Oh man. Eagle burger.
Freaking
patriotic.
Have you ridden an elephant yet?
Not yet. I unlocked the skill, but I have not seen an elephant since then. So
okay, but they're hiding.
Palanquinery.
Is that the term for elephant riding?
No,
it's actually mahout.
Oh, what?
I only know that because within like big data, one of the big machine learning tool sets is called mahout, which that's actually the name for. An elephant rider.
Oh wow! Okay, that has to do with Hadoop.
Yeah, because of the elephant? Hadoop is the core thing, and then the application that rides on top of Hadoop is called mahout.
Oh wow! No, I was referring to a palanquin, which is the name for that thing that you put on the back of an elephant so you can ride it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Fair enough. I will defer to you because I only know, I learned much the way a cockatoo or a parrot does by hearing that word a lot. So,
sure.
In terms of Hadoop and, you know, distributed computing and such.
Yeah, you Hadoop all the things.
Yeah, you Hadoop it. It's in the cloud, right?
No, yeah, so The guy who created it, his kid had a stuffed animal of an elephant he called Hadoop, so that's what they use for the name.
You guys, there's an Epiphio podcast coming out that I'm hosting.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Worlds collide.
You should listen to that. It's actually really good because most of the things I wish I could say about my job here, I can say there that I can't say here. So... So watch for that on social.
Yeah. Have all the buzzwords.
Wait, what can you, I'm trying to dissect that in my mind. all the things you can, you wish you could say about your job here, you say on the job sanctioned podcast.
Yes.
Implying that they would be positive things that you're not allowed to say on this podcast.
No, no, it's more like, on that show, it becomes more of a like constructive, a constructive thing about how to actually tell a story about these complicated and otherwise buzzword laden things.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if I said them here in the context that they would come up here, it would sound like I was bitter and angry.
Huh. Well, now I'm intrigued to listen.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be launching at the beginning of June.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, this is my way of becoming useful. Is to is like,
is it going to be on the Duck Feed Network?
No, no, it is not. No, 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 it is not.
Duck Feed grows up and gets a job.
Yeah. No, no, more like the job grows up and supports Duck Feed existing. So, well, no, more like the listeners grow up and support Duck Feed. This is way too complicated, you guys. I am so, so sorry. Let's see here. So we've done, Ben, do you have anything more about Far Cry 4 you want to say?
No, nah, I'm going to keep playing it. So okay. I'll report back next week.
At least until June 21st, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I started up New Super Mario Bros. Wii again, mm-hmm. as I alluded to. And man, is that game awesome, and man, is that game infuriating. I have a very complicated relationship with that game.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I've only ever played it co-op, which is really fun, but it was very clearly designed with single-player pretty much exclusively in mind.
Really? Because like when I played it, I thought, man, this is really designed with co-op in mind, because after the first level, like when you get to the desert, it really kind of spikes up in terms of difficulty.
So the only advantage of playing co-op is that when you die, you're not immediately kicked out of the level, which that's a pretty big advantage. But in terms of the way the characters interact with each other, theoretically, it could be used in a positive sense, but it is almost exclusively to hinder you or to set you back, essentially. So, for example, whenever a character dies or gets hit, mm-hmm. so go from big to small, I don't think you would ever notice it playing single player, but the screen freezes for probably half a second. As okay. your character sizes down or like does his little death animation thing. And not only does that freeze your co-op partners, but it also does not register any button presses made during that small window. And the number of that times that has caused one of us to just run off a ledge without jumping.
Oh, no.
Or, to do something else. It happens way more often than I would have expected. Cause you're like, oh, it's a half second window and it's only when someone dies, but it really, really interferes with your ability to play the game. So it is not uncommon to die because your partner has died, even if they're on the complete opposite side of the screen, just because of this little freeze that the screen does.
They're taking you down with them.
Exactly, yeah.
Is there any possible positive outcome from that freeze?
No, nothing good. And I think it's just one of those, like, again, if it was single player, I guarantee you would never notice it.
Yeah.
But when you do multiplayer, it really gets in the way. So that's one of the most blatant things that I've noticed as I've come back to the game. But it's also like a really solid platformer. It's Mario, and it's got all of the challenge and the, I don't want to call it like secrets of Mario, but kind of the secrets. Like, you'll be in a level and you'll think, I wonder, like, it looks like maybe if I timed this right, I could get up there. And you can, and there's something up there to reward that. And it's not really exploration. It's just rewarding mastery. Because there's stuff that you can only get to if you do something timed perfectly right. But at the same time, there's other things with co-op that just feel like they go against that. So the way the camera moves when you're in a like a timed level where either you've got to be constantly moving to the right or constantly moving up,
yeah,
is just very, very likely to kill anyone who's lagging behind. Even if they're doing fine in their own right, just the camera gets in your way.
Yeah.
So you have to stay very, very close together. But when you're staying very close together, the problem is that you can't like actually occupy the same space, which makes sense. And physically. You know, if we were trying to be realistic, you know, dark and gritty realistic Mario. But that means that, you know, if one of you jumps just a half second at the wrong time, you'll be over the other player when they try to jump and stomp on their heads and slam them into the pit, you know? So it's just a very...
That sounds like a feature.
Yeah, I guess. It's
people talk about that, though, like the co-opetition or whatever in that strain of Mario. Like,
So that part of it, the actual co-op, the actual competition is a lot of fun. So they have, I figure they're like called coin rush levels or something like that, where you go through a level and you try to get the more coins than anyone else you're playing with. And that's a ton of fun. And that actually, that then you actually use all these things that I'm talking about as annoying. But in the main game where you're just trying to get through the level and you're trying to help each other, it feels really easy to dick each other over.
Mm-hmm.
So like I've said, we're smart about it now. We recognize that, you know, if we get too stuck in an area, rather than trying to force our way through, we gotta kind of sleep on it, come back to it, because it is, like I said, it's a great platformer, and I'd love to see it all the way through to the end. Just gotta do it smartly.
Yeah. So you say you come back to this again. Are you starting from the beginning on this on your second go through, or are you picking up where you left off? Is there kind of like a difficulty curve that you're finding yourself in the middle of, or are you kind of approaching it with renewed mastery?
There's probably a little bit of mastery that carried over, but we definitely started from the beginning.
Okay.
Just to be able to ramp up into it. Cause I don't think I could have hopped straight into the further on levels and survived. So it was good just to kind of get the feel for it. Any platformer has a feel that you kind of have to acclimate to.
Yeah.
So going from like Rayman to Mario, you got to relearn how the jump feels and everything like that. So it was worth starting over again from the beginning.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, so do you have the energy to go through to the end on this one? I forget even how long this one is, because it's been a very long time since I've played it, let alone beat it.
Yeah, I don't know. We are still in areas that we have played before, but I think we're probably more than halfway through the game. So I definitely think we'll get to the end of it this time. So that's a lot. It's a fun game. We stream it a lot too. So
nice.
Keep an eye out for that.
Do you guys have the microphone set up?
We don't usually, just because we're having random conversations on the side.
Oh yeah, I suppose that would probably be a privacy thing. Where can people find your streams?
Twitch.tv/greenlaser73.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Mario.
Mm-hmm. What else?
I finished Killzone Mercenary and
okay.
I got to the multiplayer,
nice.
Which I'm pleased to say that is also a, you know, perfectly competent, FPS experience on this tiny little Vita. and I'm very impressed that they're able to pull it off as well as they do. So yeah, the single player is the story is no great shakes. It's good, and I'm always confused though why at the end of these shooters they feel like they need to do a puzzle boss to cap them off. It's like this entire game is been built around just kind of regular shooting mechanics. There are more difficult enemies, sure, but why do you feel like you need to completely flip the game and introduce something new at the very end that doesn't really work that well? Like there's this whole thing around, like, you know, the guy has a shield, so you gotta lure him close to something to EMP the shield to then shoot him, and then like rinse and repeat, and just it feels very awkward. It's not, you know, it's a first person shooter. It doesn't lend itself to puzzle bosses. So I don't know why they chose to go that direction at the very end. They should have just given me a really difficult combat arena. And that would have felt like a more fitting close to the game.
I'm trying to think of another first person shooter that has done a boss fight that wasn't a puzzle fight outside of a BioShock game.
Puzzle is too generous. So
okay.
let me walk that back a bit. It's the final boss fight has to be one-on-one combat with an enemy that you have to get through these kind of like stages with, where the entire game has been built around like, hey, let's fight these waves of enemies, or let's get through this group, or room of people. And then the final boss, the big bad that you face off against, is always much more invincible than everyone else for some reason.
Yeah.
And the game, is not built for that.
Like Halo 3 did this, right? Or 2 did this, right?
I think so, yeah. The Uncharted did it.
I can't remember.
Where was it done in Halo 2?
The monkey boss?
At the very, very end, like the final brute.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the name? The sergeant has the magical sniper rifle that's apparently the only one that can drop his shield.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. And it's like they've got to drag out a one-on-one conflict in a game that's not designed around one-on-one conflict. And that doesn't work very well. But otherwise, like I said, I've been very impressed by the single-player game. And the multiplayer, I only played about an hour of it, but that was very good as well.
So, like, how's the map variety? Like, is there enough there for it to be something that you play, like, a round of every couple days or so? Or is it more of a novelty?
No, it seems very robust. So I played three different maps because I played three different rounds and got a different map each time. So I'm not sure how many total are in the game, but the maps don't feel, and again, this was something that impressed me about the single player as well. They don't feel like they were shrunk down to fit a Vita's rendering capacity or anything like that. Like, they had open spaces. They had plenty of ground to cover within the map. So it didn't feel like you were playing with restrictions, even though I'm sure you were when I was, you know, in the game. Just because it's a tiny little piece of hardware that they're getting the most out of. But the cool thing that the multiplayer does, so matches are 10 minutes a pop, and they have kind of a contract system where, like, you know, the top three players get a bigger payout or bigger bonus than everyone else. So it does kind of fit that mercenary theme. Cool. But the cool thing is, I think it was one of the Modern Warfare games had a dog tag system where you would kill someone and they would drop their dog tags, and you wouldn't get credit unless you went and grabbed the dog tag.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Kill confirmed, I think they call him Call of Duty.
Yeah. So this has a kind of a form of that where, you know, you can get the kill just regular, but every time you kill someone, they drop their card. And every player is assigned a card, and it's you know, your standard 52-card deck. And I forget, it's like, you know, hearts represent secondary weapons, spades represent sniper rifles, clubs represent assault weapons, you know, so, but it's like basically your rank using these different types of weapons. And when you kill someone, they drop their card. And if you pick up that card, you add it to your deck and you get basically a bonus when you complete a suit or complete an entire deck, which is interesting. It's like their take on prestiging, I guess. I'm not sure because I haven't gotten there. But that adds this extra little element of risk and reward. It's like, hey, I can get some immediate cash by grabbing the card and then work towards a larger bonus of completing the deck if I run out and where I just shot this guy and grab his card. But that exposes me to more fire. So it's kind of it's not as intense as Kill Confirmed, but it is a nice little kind of nod in that direction that I appreciated.
Well, it messes with the incentives, right?
Yeah. It's like the AI, if I stay alive, you know, longer, I can get more kills, which is kind of a base level payout. But if I risk my life to get this card, that's a larger payout in a lump sum that might make it worth, you know, if I can grab that card and I get killed, maybe that's worth it.
Yeah. I really like that kind of metagame stuff. Like, I feel weird calling it the metagame because obviously it's all part of the round-to-round experience. But, you know, if you look at just most multiplayer shooters, anything above and beyond, like just kill as many people as possible to make those numbers line up, is kind of the metagame.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, and so,
like, I want to level up this weapon or what have you.
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, okay. So I'm going to be really late to the party here and say that, like, since Modern Warfare Call of Duty 4, that has been the major, like the major, like the major implementation. But like you talking about this card system, this deck of cards kind of thing, has made me more interested in playing a multiplayer shooter than I have been in years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, good.
So, but Ben, you vocally agreed there. What do you think?
I lost track of what we were talking about.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah, I think it's cool. Like the extraneous, you know, multiplayer behaviors leading into this kind of metagame reward, I think is far more interesting than anything you could possibly do, you know, above and beyond like the let's make the shooting tight. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what it does. Oh, go ahead.
I think the other big thing, at least for me, is I like that it kind of it forces me slash really gives me an excuse to play the guns in a lot of these that like maybe I'm not as good with, but I have more fun with. You know, either because I'm trying to, like, get more points in Call of Duty, or it sounds like, you know, maybe complete a deck of cards in this one or something like that. Like, I like that mechanic, particularly since it seems like every game has this gun that's, like, you know, everyone wants to run around with, like, dual Uzis, even if that's not viable.
Yeah, it encourages non-optimal play styles. Which is honestly a game getting canonized is the fastest way to make it not fun. It's right. Like, here's exactly the loadout you need to use, and here's exactly the spots you should go. And, you know, it's just all set in stone. And that's there's no unpredictability in that. There's no fun in that. So I think anything that gets people to try things that normally wouldn't be the best way to go, or do something that is unexpected, is really valuable.
Yeah, I think kind of going back to what I was talking about with Civriv at the top of the episode, like it just seems like it's a game mechanic where it's introducing some sort of like balance. And so what makes it fun is trying to figure out, you know, when to use one strategy and when to use the other, as far as like, I guess with what you're talking about is getting dog tags. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was also impressed by, that there are people playing this thing, you know. I think that in my mind, this Vita shooter would be relatively barren. And the first game I played had four people in it because I joined right at the end of the round. But then both the other games I played had like 7 out of 8 spots filled. So
yeah, oh, sounds like it's pretty active.
Yeah,
yeah. And I am like I said, this is I had no idea that this like existed. And like I'd heard the name but hadn't given it any mind, and this is like proof positive that you can do a really high quality first person shooter on a mobile system.
Yeah. At multiple points during this discussion of Killzone Mercenary, I decided to, or I was tempted to run and grab my Vita and run and grab my run and grab my PS4 controller, because I'm trying to think like why am I not like jumping on the opportunity to play this? Because I can, like I have it for free via PS Plus or whatever. And I've got this little scale here that I was using. Normally I use it for food to measure out like cuts of chicken or whatever. But I was most recently using it to measure out like letter weight to send miscellanea to Gary for sending out to Patreon backers or whatever. And I wanted
to send chicken letters.
Yes, to send chicken letters. No, like index cards and stuff that I take notes on so he can send it out to backers on Patreon. I wanted to compare the weight because my gut tells me that the PS Vita actually weighs less than the PS4 controller. The DS4. Oh, do you want me to do this?
I've never held a PS4 controller. Are they really that heavy?
I believe that they are. Let me go do this. Like I'm. Okay.
It's all that new tech they had to put in it.
Yeah, I will BRB. One second here.
That would be pretty amazing though if the PS4 controller is heavier because the PS Vita has a screen on it.
I am back.
All right, let's get the numbers.
Okay. Let's see here. So the PS4 controller, I'm going to do this in grams, so it's exact. 219, okay?
Mm-hmm. Got to do it in grams so that, you know, it's science.
PS Vita? Oh, God. 219.
You're kidding.
What? Nope. I am not kidding you. Exactly the same.
Oh, my God. I would never have guessed that. That's incredible.
Okay, so this might be the fact that I maybe I have the newer model of Vita than you have, so it might be slightly lighter. I'm not exactly sure, but I was about to go into this whole thing. Like, man, maybe I just can't play a first-person shooter on Vita because it's, like, so much lighter, right? Like, it just feels so kind of insubstantial compared to, you know, holding this controller. But if they weigh the exact same thing, like if they like if they weigh the same amount, then I have no basis for that, and all of a sudden I am more full of shit than usual. So
did you include the cord?
Here's your out. Is there is no comfortable angle at which to hold the screen and controller combo. You know, so I always wind up with one of my arms falling asleep or just feeling like my neck is strained when I'm playing the Vita for too long. So
I only ever play the Vita in bed. So that might
that's even worse.
Well, no, like when I know I'm going to fall asleep, it just hits me in the forehead and then I go to sleep.
How do you not get gorilla arm?
Gorilla arm? What?
Yeah. That is the technical term for, you know, when you're using like the device, your arms get tired.
No, they don't.
Oh, well, when I do it, my arms get tired.
Are gorillas notoriously tired?
Their arms are.
You know, from all that swinging.
Mm-hmm. One sec. I am posting it to the chat thing to prove that I'm not crazy.
Okay. Let's see it here.
Yeah, there we go. Gorilla arm.
Okay. Let's see here.
Wikipedia says it exists.
Gorilla arm. This is crazy. Extended use of gestural interfaces without the ability of the user to rest their arm is referred to as gorilla arm. It can result in fatigue and even repetitive stress injury when routinely used in a work setting. Oh, so this is a Minority Report effect.
Yeah.
Where all of the interfaces they showed in that would be completely impractical because most people's arms would be either incredibly buff or always exhausted.
Huh. Yeah, I still think people overestimate the degree to which that would be problematic. But considering, I mean, I guess assuming people aren't getting horribly murdered that often in your city.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're in Chicago, you're effing screwed.
So, since we're talking about Philip K. Dick novels, are we done with Killzone?
I think so. I don't have much more to say about it. It's nice to have in my back pocket, in my back pocket, if I want to scratch that shooter itch. So. Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's button it up. Thank you so much for listening to episode number 105 of The Level. We really appreciate you guys sticking around. There's no really big stuff that I can think of that people ought to do aside from leave us a rating or review on iTunes. It's been a little bit since people have done that, and that really does help us out. I am in the process of doing the SoundCloud migration, which I've been talking about for months and months, but that is a very time-consuming thing. So watch out for that in the future. But otherwise, like us on Facebook. That's where the majority of our interaction happens. That is at facebook.com/theLevel Podcast. And we will see you there. Guys, is there anything that I am missing?
Mm-mm. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia, at D Furia on Twitter.
I was once David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
But he has now been possessed by Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for a discussion of the title. Delay. All right, guys, I have three this time, and I cannot decide. The first one is, did I just funke myself? The second is Galog.
I like that one. Don't judge my silence as not liking that.
Yep.
I thought that was a good one.
It's a portmanteau, yeah.
Yep.
No, it's a portmanteau and a palindrome. Jeez.
Yep, it is. Yeah.
Wait, what was that in reference to?
It is in reference to making gulag, which is almost a palindrome, palindrome.
Yeah, I'm tracking now.
Okay, yep. And the third is too legit to start, where two is numerals. What do you guys think?
I kind of like the last one, but I feel like Galog is...
Yeah, I think I'm leaning towards number two as well.
I like Galog as well.
Yeah, I like Galog too because it looks like Galaga.
Yep, I was about to say we'll get all these comments that you left an A off.
Yep, Galog it is. Thanks, guys.